All right, what's up, guys? This is David Tremonti. You are listening to Top Turtle MMA Podcast. Myself and Gumby taped episode 15. I was putting it together here on Tuesday night when the big news broke. If you're an avid listener of the show, I assume you're a hardcore MMA nerd and already know about it, but here's the news break. The UFC 200 main event has been canceled. Dana White has pulled Conor McGregor from the main event because he refused to do a media appearance. This was on the heels about 4 hours prior to Conor McGregor tweeting out that he was retiring young. So we had the show ready to go. I'm going to play it for you here in a minute, but it just felt too weird to post the show and not have at least a quick reaction to this huge news that the UFC 200 main event has been canceled. I've been texting back and forth with Gumby like a couple of little girls. He's on vacation. I was putting the show together with the non-existent intern and the non-existent audio engineer. Gumby is of the mindset that there's still a 70% chance that Conor McGregor is on the UFC 200 main event. I have to agree with that. I'm usually the bigger conspiracy theorist of the two of us on this podcast, but I believe that Conor McGregor, Dana White, the UFC might have cooked this up. I think maybe UFC 200 wasn't tracking well. I think there was a bit of a letdown amongst hardcore fans about the lineup as presently constructed. And all I know is Conor McGregor, the UFC, and UFC 200 is bigger today than it was yesterday. Him not wanting to do a media appearance causes them to pull him out of the main event. I don't buy it. Him not doing the media appearance has actually made UFC bigger than if he had done the media appearance. That might be some meta shit, but it's true. If you don't want to take it to a conspiracy level, that's fine. Maybe Conor McGregor just acted on his own. Maybe this was his way out of the Nate Diaz rematch. Maybe he never really wanted to do that rematch and the UFC had just pushed him into that rematch. Or maybe this really was just a pissing contest between the Fertittas, Dana White, and Conor McGregor, and the UFC called Conor McGregor's bluff. No one really knows yet. Everyone's waiting for another statement from Conor McGregor, but again, I had to at least give you guys the quick reaction. Gumby and I will be back next week, and I'm sure more news will have broken and we'll have a better reaction to this. I'm going to shut up now. I'm going to play you episode 15. We talked to a couple of EBI competitors. We got our inner grappling nerd on. We also break down and preview Jon Jones versus Ovince St. Preux, UFC 197, and of course give you all our reaction to Glover Teixeira's knockout over Rashad Evans and the rest of the big fights from that card. So enjoy this episode, and just remember, it's the fight business. It's not about your biggest fighter of all time refusing to do a media appearance. The UFC could have flown their production crew out to Iceland, where Conor McGregor is training, and CGI him into this photo shoot they wanted him to do. So we do not buy that for a second. Anywho, enjoy the episode. We'll be back next week with more on the Conor McGregor fallout.
Episode 15 of Top Turtle MMA is brought to you by Sisu Mouthguards. Sisu Mouthguards, the most breathable, strongest, yet lightweight and durable mouthguards on the market. Now, I don't know if you're just living under a rock or living in a cave and you don't know about all the damaging side effects of getting a concussion, CTE. For Christ's sakes, Will Smith did a movie about concussions recently. Get your head out of the sand. You need to protect yourself. You need to protect your brain. And until they come up with some sort of magical fix to concussions, the best way to do that, you gotta wear a mouthguard, people. And not only that does it help protect against concussions, it can also help prevent against losing a tooth. That old school 1970s hockey player look with the toothless smile, chicks don't dig that anymore. They dig a nice set of pearly whites. Am I right, Gumby?
You are right. And the best way to protect against a concussion or protect against losing those teeth is to get a Sisu mouthguard. That's SISUguard.com.
Without further ado, Sisu mouthguard brings you episode 15 of Top Turtle MMA. Please play the music. We are rolling. This is Top Turtle MMA, episode 15. I am David Tremonti, one of your two co-hosts, and I am joined, as always, by the co-editor of MMA Manifesto, Daniel Gumby Vreeland. How are you today, Dan?
I'm excellent. It was nice to have some MMA back. Not that Croatia wasn't MMA last weekend, but...
This felt more normal because it was on a Saturday.
It was on a Saturday. There were a little bit higher profile names on there. Yeah, and it was a good card top to bottom. I enjoyed this one.
So we, of course, are Top Turtle MMA. We so appreciate you hitting the download button or however it is you get us in your ears. You can catch us on all the top streaming podcast services, TuneIn, Stitcher, SoundCloud, iTunes, and of course you could catch us on the mothership, MMA-manifesto.com. Click on the podcast tab. It's where we live. And Gumby, do you have a Twitter?
I do have a Twitter, and you can get me at Gumby Vreeland. That's Vreeland. You can get the show at Top Turtle MMA, and you can email us at topturtlemma@gmail.com.
All right, with my least favorite part of doing a podcast out of the way, we can now react to Glover Teixeira just putting the beat down and the hurting and putting Rashad Evans to sleep with a quick left cross to the chin, followed by a straight right jab to the nose that just put the lights out.
Yeah, he did kind of what I thought he was going to do. And you know, I always like to refer back to my prediction show. But even with a couple of losses on his record recently, I knew Glover wasn't done. You know, Glover has looked good even sometimes in his losses. Whereas, like, Rashad Evans in some of his losses has just looked atrocious. You know, like, when he lost to Bader, he looked bad. And I think having lost to Bader and looked really bad but, like, lasted, it gave him hope for his career. This, I feel like, it's sad to say, it feels like it put a nail in a coffin, didn't it?
I believe so. And I think when your lights go out like that, I'd like to see him probably take 9 months at least off, if not a full year, if he was going to attempt to come back. But I think to come back, you know, this summer, I would see the same result happening. And I don't even know who he'd be fighting yet. But I just think, you know, it's a tough go of it, because here's the thing. He beat, and I'm going off the top of my head here, I want to say he beat an aging Dan Henderson. He beat Kael Sonnen, an aging Kael Sonnen, right before he popped for PEDs. And then he, you know, tore his ACL or MCL, I don't recall, and was out for a year. Comes back, doesn't look good against Bader, sluggish, you might say. And then Glover puts him out. Yeah, end of the road, it feels like.
Yeah, and you know, you said he would definitely, you know, probably wind up in the same place should he come back in 9 months. I think it comes down to who he fights. But, you know, like, is he willing to go all the way down the ladder again? You know, like, he's not a top 15 fighter anymore.
No.
You know, even in a shallow light heavyweight division. You know what I mean?
So then, you know, this has always come up with Rashad, a cut to middleweight, perhaps.
I know that they say that, but doesn't he look too big for that?
Probably.
Like he doesn't look fat anywhere. Like, he doesn't look like he has any fat on him. I don't think he's going to make that.
No IV for rehydration either now.
And even if he could, I feel like that division is, like, much deeper, right? Like, do you want to see him try to battle any of those top three guys?
Yoel Romero.
No, or
Weidman. Jacare. Rockhold.
Yeah, I don't want to see him fight any of those guys. You know, like, the only benefit of dropping down is I think there are some more, like, fun fights down there. Like, he could fight, you know, Machida if he ever comes back. He could fight Henderson. He could, you know, like, there are a couple of, like, old-timer fights there. Not that he's particularly old, but he is, like, he needs those end-of-the-road old-timer fights, or he's got to go fight prospects, because if he keeps fighting these top guys, he's going to keep getting crushed.
I mean, outside of the heavyweight division, you know, being old in MMA, he's 36 with a lot of mileage on the car, and, you know, look at horse racing. Those horses are put to pasture at age 3 or 4. I'm not a horse racing guy, but, you know, he's older, end of story. And well, the more fun thing to talk about, I think, and maybe more relevant, because, you know, what Rashad does, we'll see. We've said this before on the show. We're not going to be the guys who say you should retire.
No, but he's also got – I will throw this out here too. He's also got something after fighting. I mean, he's a hell of an analyst. Yes. He's on the Fox desk all the time, and he does a hell of a job at it. So, like, you know, I feel like there's even less incentive to get back in the cage knowing that.
I agree. What I'm more excited to talk about, though, is where Glover goes from here. You know, I said it last week on the show. I am not unbiased in this regard. I have a close friend who is his jiu-jitsu coach. But, you know, I'm a big Glover fan, and he had two losses in a row, one to John Jones where he injured his shoulder in the first round, but, you know, stayed through for the whole five-round fight, lost by unanimous decision, and then got wrestle-fucked by Phil Davis, then comes back, puts the hurt on OSP with his fists, but ended up rear-naked choking him, and then knocked out Patrick Cummins, and now knocks out Rashad Evans. So three-fight win streak. He called out Rumble Johnson after the fight, and I think that's the perfect match to make. Dana White said he liked the match as well.
Yeah, I like that. He's got to prove that he's good enough against a top-tier opponent. Rumble's just sitting around at this point. We got to wait to hear where he's going to get booked, so it just makes more sense, right?
I would now, my early thoughts on that fight are that Glover is no dummy, and he would not just stand and trade with Rumble in the first round or so.
I mean, I would like to think he wouldn't.
He's going to grapple him a little bit. He's going to press him up against the cage a little bit. He's going to wear Rumble out and kind of do the Daniel Cormier approach and then look for a finish in the third or fourth round.
I would think so. That would be the logical way to do it. I'd also like to think that Rumble's been working on that kind of stuff, though.
Saw that sprawl against Bader, right?
Yeah. And it gave us some hope. So, you know, hey, maybe this turns into a much more fun fight than we think it is.
Now, you know what kind of irked me, what stuck in my craw, what really chapped my behind was... There was a lot of internet hate about the card itself. It was obviously, I'm talking about Fight Night Tampa now. You know, it went through a lot of changes. It was supposed to be Khabib versus Ferguson, a fight we were all psyched about. And then at one point, it was even Glover versus Shogun. Then they had to move Shogun to the Brazil show, and there were changes. And, you know, people complained and said this card is cursed, which, yeah, it was. But at the end of the day, there were a lot of ranked fighters on this show, and, you know, we got movement in certain divisions, and, you know, we'll get to it when we come to breaking down the prelims, but, you know, you had a John Dodson advancing, you had a Khabib coming off from a long layoff, making his claim, and, you know, you go even to the co-main event, Rose Namajunas, getting the split decision win over Tisha Torres,
Was it split or was it unanimous? I thought it was 29-28 all cards.
Was it?
Yeah, you can look that up, but I'm pretty sure it was 29-28 in all cards. But to finish your point there, yeah, like, really great movement in the division for her, you know, coming back from a loss against her in the past, able to capitalize that. And you got to imagine she's, you know, I thought as soon as I was done watching the fight that she's next in line for the Claudia Joanna winner. Dana said she's got one more in front of her. I don't know who you match that up with, but
that's insane that she, who else would be in line if not?
Well,
Rose.
I mean, I could tell you some names. I mean, she does have a loss to Carla Esparza, right?
Fuck Carla Esparza. I mean, she was a deer in the headlights when she lost that title. Joanna, she's been gone for a year. Now she just automatically gets another title fight again.
You know, like,
fuck off.
I agree with you. I would say, you know, cause obviously I was calling for a Torres title shot if she won. So with a loss, you would assume the girl who beat her is pretty damn close too. So I instantly thought Namajunas gets the winner.
And I'm sorry, Dana White, did you not just call Paige VanZant one of the top 10 fighters in the world when talking about her Dancing
and
with the Stars appearance?
Then she got crushed by Rose Namajunas.
So if not Rose, then who?
Yeah, I can't think of anybody in that 150.
So the co-main event, you had Rose Namajunas.
Good movement in the 115 division.
Right. And then you go to Nurmagomedov coming back against Horcher after a two-year layoff. All right, are we going to go crazy because he beat up Horcher and probably made that last into the second round just so he could kind of, you know,
he could show some stuff?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I thought the same thing.
Get his win back and whatnot, timing. But you know what? It allowed us to say, okay, he hasn't gone back a step. If anything, you know, he's the same Khabib, and I'm very comfortable if he can't fight this summer because of Ramadan. So, you know, you have Eddie Alvarez and Pettis, however that shakes out, probably RDA.
Or you mean Alvarez.
Sorry, yes, Eddie Alvarez versus RDA, the champion. You figure RDA is going to win that, at least in my mind. And then you have RDA versus Khabib in the fall. Or if you want to match up the fight that we lost, Tony Ferguson versus Khabib, with the winner getting RDA, I'm fine, honestly, with either scenario. Would you be okay with Khabib getting an instant title shot, or do you want him fighting Ferguson?
I don't want to see him get an instant title shot, only because... I don't think that Horcher was the type of opponent where you're going to see him get all of his skill set out. You know, I'm not necessarily saying he doesn't deserve it or he couldn't handle it.
Can I play devil's advocate for
one second? Sure,
I'm sorry to cut you off, which is, I agree with you. I don't give title shots off of beating Horcher in his UFC debut. However, this is a man who beat the shit out of the current champion.
But how
for
many
three
years
rounds.
Ago?
2 years ago.
2 years ago. Okay? And you just told me that you don't give a shit about the fact that Carla Esparza beat up Rose Namajunas 2 years ago, right?
But I haven't seen... Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess then
you haven't seen Khabib.
It was a unanimous decision win for Rose. I don't know why I thought that. I thought one judge had it for Tisha, but maybe I was just thinking of one judge gave her a round I didn't think she deserved. Anyway, yeah. Bottom line. Okay, so basically what you're saying is you want Khabib versus Ferguson in a number one contender.
I'm not even sure I want him against Ferguson. I mean, like, so didn't... First of all, Ferguson just got called out by...
Michael Chiesa,
who I'd love to see that fight.
Yeah. Michael Chiesa on Saturday night beat Beneil Dariush, lost the first round by all accounts, didn't look so good on the feet, came back in the second round, took Beneil Dariush's back. He's never been submitted, has Beneil Dariush, and Michael Chiesa squeezed the life out of him and got the rear naked choke.
Yeah, rear naked choke, really a neck crank, though. Right. I mean, he was on the chin, and he really cranked it. Yeah, so to me, you know, set up Chiesa and Ferguson, and in the meantime, you know, he could, you know, I would be fine watching Nurmagomedov fight, you know, Edson Barboza if he beat Pettis.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's sad to say, but I would match him with Pettis, but you know what he's going to do to Pettis.
Yeah.
I mean, if Eddie Alvarez can grapple him to death, I mean, I can only imagine. But that's the kind of win he needs on his resume to make sure he can prove to the world that he can do that against an elite guy and that he can prove to himself. You know, I almost think it's a mental space thing. You know, like, you can't go into a title fight confident when the only person you've beaten the last 2.5 years is Daryl Horsher.
I have to disagree with you there. I think Khabib is confident enough to go into the fight with RDA because he's already beat him.
I mean, beat
the crap out of him for three rounds.
That's true. I don't think that's the same
he's
RDA
never lost.
Anymore, but... I could be wrong.
Yeah. So for me, I think if anything, the Khabib performance should have two people very scared. One would be an Anthony Pettis, who just style-wise does not match up
well
with
Khabib. That's an awful style for him.
And two would be this guy out of Ireland. Don't know if you've ever heard of him, Conor McGregor.
Conor McGregor should never go to 155 because of Khabib Nurmagomedov.
Yeah.
I mean, if he really works on his wrestling, then okay, maybe. But like... I mean, if you thought Chad Mendes took him down a couple of times,
yeah.
I can only imagine what Khabib would do to him. It would be scary.
I actually will say this with some confidence, and I'm not taking anything away from Conor because I'm a huge Conor fan. Conor could go work on his wrestling with the USA wrestling team for the next 30 years, and he's still not going to beat Khabib
yeah.
in a grappling contest.
I mean, Khabib used to wrestle bears for real.
Right. I mean, Conor could knock him out. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying grappling for grappling, it's going to be Khabib all day. But then moving on, Gumby, you also had the plucky, someone we mentioned as an underrated fighter, Raquel Pennington, getting the split decision over Betch Kahea. And I was so happy for Rocky Pennington. She's someone who has a split decision loss to Holly Holm. I think she's gotten a little overlooked here in the division. The rankings are a mess. They had her at 13. She's won 3 out of her last 4. Somehow Sarah McMahon sits at number 6. I think she's 1-3 in her last 4, if I'm not mistaken. Raquel Pennington, I don't know if the rankings came out today, how many spots she moved up, but this was a signature win for her. Do you have any thoughts on where she goes next?
Well, first I want to start by just saying, like, I do agree that the rankings are absolute trash, and part of it is that the UFC just lets any news outlet apply for it. You know, like, we definitely could have applied for it and gotten our names on there, and we could be ranking fighters every week, but the problem with that is now there's, like, 260 people voting on this panel, which, in theory, is good. However, are you sure every single one of them is taking it seriously? Are you sure every single one of them is updating their list every week, or are they just sending the same list in?
Are they even MMA journalists? Is it just some nerds from Gizmodo?
Anybody who has a news outlet that is at least somewhat legitimate can apply for credentials to do that. I'm really against the UFC's ranking system. I take more stock in, you know, even the one we run on MMA Manifesto. You guys should check that out, MMA-Manifesto.com's ranking systems, because they do them very often. We have a very dedicated panel who votes every single week, and we talk about them back and forth. That's the type of thing that holds more weight for me than the UFC ranking systems. And Pennington is definitely going to be in my thought process for the top 10 in that division soon. You know, like you said, she was down there. She should be higher than somebody like Sarah McMahon, but she still does need to fight one of those, like, super top-tier people. You know, Kohea had a title shot, but I would never have considered her...
She talked herself into a title shot.
Which, like, We all know fighters who've done that. But she had like a Shael Sonnen title shot. You know what I mean?
So actually the rankings have come out today, Gumby, and she moved up a couple of places, three to be exact. She's now ranked number 9, is Raquel Pennington. And to your point, you'd want to see her face a number 7 Jessica Eye, a number 8 Liz Carmouche, a number 6 Sarah McMahon.
I think Jessica Eye is an intriguing matchup because, you know, she dealt pretty well with Kohea's boxing. And I think Eyes is just a step better than Kohea's. She adds a little bit more to the grappling game. She's like a very similar fighter to Kohea, only just a little bit better in a lot of areas.
Right. So, yeah, that'd be a good place for her to go. Where do you see Betch going? Where do you match her up next the loss?
I mean, you know, she might take a pretty big slide here, and you might see her against, you know, when they find 135ers to bring in, a lot of times they feed them somebody off a 2-fight losing streak that is a top division person. Right. I'm finding they do it a lot in the women's divisions. They did it with the Polish girl they brought over.
Valentina Shlavenko?
Yeah, her first fight over was somebody coming off some losses, but also kind of higher in the division, you know? So they might do that with her. They might bring in, you know, an Invicta champ, you know, somebody like Tonya Evinger. I would love to see Tonya Evinger come over and match her up with Betch Kohea. That would be a fun fight right away.
I also would say, and you're completely right, they match Valentina Shlavenko off in her first fight with Sarah Kaufman.
Yeah, so right away she got the top of the division just to see, you know, throw her in the deep water, see if she can swim. And, you know, I think Kohea is an excellent opponent to do that to somebody.
I really liked what I saw out of Valentina Shevchenko against Amanda Nunes. Let's not forget that Amanda Nunes' last fight before getting a title shot was against Valentina Shevchenko, and Shevchenko won the third round, in my opinion. I wouldn't mind seeing Betch versus Valentina Shevchenko.
I think Shevchenko would damage her bad. I would like that fight because I like Shevchenko, and I think she'd slaughter Kohea. But I think you need to keep Shevchenko up. You need to put Kohea down.
Well, wouldn't that do that then?
You need to give her lower competition. Kohea needs to fight like a newcomer. Kohea needs to fight somebody coming off some losses.
Now, speaking of a newcomer, looking for a fight, took another hit. First Sage Northcutt loses, and now Randy Brown takes the loss to Michael Graves. Went down in the second round to a rear naked choke. Michael Graves, the ATT product, looked really good in this fight.
Yeah, Michael Graves looked really good. I definitely underestimated how good his grappling was because I said, you know, as long as Randy Brown keeps it standing, it's his fight, and I stick by that. You know, I think if Randy Brown could have kept that standing. And he's really athletic and really strong for a guy at his weight class. So for Graves to be able to just take him down and do whatever he wanted to him on the ground, you know, kudos to him. He's definitely somebody who deserves a step up in competition there.
So does this mean that Mickey Gall is now the remaining undefeated looking for a fighter?
I think so. Although this weekend, and we'll get into the fights for this weekend, Cody East, the heavyweight, is going to be there. And he's definitely going to be one you're going to want to keep your eye on.
So it was kind of interesting because, you know, Randy Brown, the much hyped prospect, lost in the second round of the rear naked choke, as we just said. And then our boy, Olawale Bangbos, lost a unanimous decision loss to Cesar Ferrara.
Different fight, same story, too. I mean, like, just got out-grappled. I mean, his aggression was too much. He needed to chill out and work his strikes. And by the time he had realized that, because I think he did realize it in the second round, you saw him, like, back away from an exchange at one point in time. And basically, there was this, like, look, like, man, I can't keep doing this because he's just going to keep taking me down. By that point, he was too exhausted. He had made the decision too late, and it wound up costing him.
I really feel like it's a sign of how far the sport has come and how far and how deep the UFC roster is, which is that a guy like, you know, Bangbos, a guy like Randy Brown can't just rely on their power for the first four or five fights of their, you know, UFC career.
Because if you think about that, some of the better boxers or kickboxers we had, you know, even just 5 years ago, they rolled through their first fights.
Right.
And then they had to fight somebody who had it all. You know, like these Fajea, I mean, you know, don't say anything bad about Fajea, but he had lost three of his four fights by KO. Still, he was able to exploit the grappling of Bangboche. So, I mean, like, it's deep. It's deep now, and you have to come with everything or else you're done.
And speaking of someone who came with everything, John Dodson looked like a house on fire, put the hurtin' on Manville Gamburian, knocked him out in about the first minute there.
47 seconds.
It's a nice reintroduction to the 135-pound bantamweight division for Dodson. Where do you see him going from here, and does he have what it takes to compete at the top of the 135-pound division?
I mean, my first thought when I saw that fight, I watched that fight right there, my first thought was give him a title shot. I mean, like, he's knocked out TJ Dillashaw easily.
My first thought was match him up with TJ Dillashaw on a rematch.
I mean, you could match him up with TJ Dillashaw on a rematch. I mean, if Faber got hurt,
you'd want Dodson
in
there?
I'd want Dodson
before TJ?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep, I do.
Strong words.
Because, I mean, like, just think about the matchup, right? We saw what Dillashaw Cruz looks like. It is a very technical fight with two guys who fight very similarly, and one is just better than the other at his own damn game, right? Dominic Cruz is better at being TJ Dillashaw than TJ Dillashaw is. You know, TJ Dillashaw is like...
Or could you say Dominic Cruz is better at being Dominic Cruz than TJ Dillashaw is?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, TJ Dillashaw is Dominic Cruz diet Dominic Cruz. I mean, like, he's good at all of those things.
Neo footwork, they call it.
Yeah, he's not as good as Cruz is, and I don't think he ever is going to be as good as him. So do I want to see a rematch? Down the road, I would want to see a rematch, but I want to see him take the necessary time to make some adjustments. You know, I don't want to see him get the immediate rematch because I think there are some things he needs to work out in order to beat Cruz at his own game. Whereas if you put somebody like Dodson in there, that is a whole new game because it becomes this, like, is Cruz's footwork good enough to stay away from that crazy, crazy speed? And people were worried about him losing speed going to 135. He didn't lose a damn second.
Yeah.
His speed is out of this world. Could that speed catch and or tag Dominic Cruz? I want to know. I mean, I want him there right now.
I mean, I have to figure that Dominic Cruz could pull a Mighty Mouse and negate the Dodson speed. But I also, for me, just with the reintroduction into 135, I don't know. It's a different bantamweight division these days. You know, Asensio coming back. You have an Aljamain Sterling rising to the top.
Aljamain Sterling Dodson would be amazing.
That's what I'm saying. So I'd like to wait a little bit on the Dodson title shot. I'd like to see Dodson fight one of these guys that I've come to know and love at the tops of the 135-pound division. But your point is well spoken and well taken, which is we have another contender here at 135.
Yeah, and this division might be one of the most crowded at the top.
It's
right
start
now.
Right, and I Almeida. Mean, we haven't even mentioned Almeida and Cody Garbrandt.
Almeida, Garbrandt, Aljamain, TJ, Dodson. I mean, if you really want to say Brian Caraway's still undefeated, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I don't like him either, and he's going to fight Aljamain. You know, if he beat Aljamain by some miracle,
right,
like, you would have to consider him too. There are like 6-7 guys right here at the top that are all ready for title shots.
It's pretty awesome.
And it's a great time to watch the bantamweight division.
And I'll tell you, you know, just to bring this back to my original point, which was you can, you know, cry about Lyoto Machida popping for steroids, which is a super bummer, and the fight with Henderson being off and Shogun getting moved off the card, and then obviously the huge bummer of Ferguson dropping out. But again, at the end of the day, it's just about what transpires on the night of the fights. And Saturday night, UFC Tampa, we got a great night of fights.
Yeah, it was a phenomenal night.
All right, so with that said, we will switch our attention now to the world of sub-only grappling, Gumby. I think anyone who listens to the show knows that we are sub-only nerds, we are no-gi jiu-jitsu nerds, and we could not be more pumped for EBI 6 this Sunday. Took a bit of a hit recently. Eddie Cummins dropped out with an injury, but he'll be replaced by his protege, a younger member of the Danaher Death Squad, a leg lock attacker in his own right, Gordon Ryan. But we got an opportunity to catch up with two of the EBI competitors. We got a chance to talk to
Abraham Marte
and Amir Alam.
Two giant guys for one of these sub-only tournaments. Both of them weighing 250 or more, but both of them with crazy games for being 250 guys. One loves to work out of his guard. The other one loves rubber guard and stuff like that at like 260. So These two that we talked to are definitely some wild cards in there, because we're not used to seeing an EBI with huge dudes in it. So we're going to get a chance to see that, and these two talked us through what it's going to be like.
So with that being said, these two interviews, which we will play for you back to back, and then on the other side, we will break down UFC 197, Jones versus St. Preux. But these two interviews with Amir Alam and Abraham Marte are brought to you by New England Submission Fighting. New England Submission Fighting, a mixed martial arts gym in the lovely, quaint, picturesque town of Amherst, Massachusetts, located on the western half of the state of Massachusetts. It's the state that started America. Classes 6 days a week. No gi grappling is the specialty. So perfect leading in to these two interviews with EBI sub only no gi competitors. If you are in or around the Western Mass area, stop on by, tell them Dave and Gumby sent you, and feel free to check out the website Amherst MMA. That's AmherstMMA.com. You'll find out info on the instructors, the schedule, and we so encourage you to come on by, because they sponsor our show and they bring you our interviews with Abraham Marte and Amir Alam.
This is Daniel Gumby Vreeland here with my co-host Dave Tremonti, and we are talking with EBI 6 competitor Abraham Marte. So Abraham, heading into the week here where EBI is taking place on Sunday, you know, what's going on with your training, and how are you feeling heading into the tournament?
Man, I feel amazing. I couldn't be more stoked about, like, you know, this type of event going on and being able to be a part of it. You know what I mean? I wasn't even aware of, I follow jiu-jitsu and I follow grappling, but I'm not so much focused on the scheduling of competitions and what's going on. But I remember when the tournament was going to be in Mexico, I didn't even consider going just because of logistics. So just because being that I'm Dominican, you know, it's I need like to do visa processes for most of the countries I visit. So I just like discarded that, and I was focusing on doing the World Pro competition. At the same time, the opportunity presented itself. Like Eddie contacted me and told me what was going on and all that stuff. And it's much closer. And it's much doper to be part of one of these competitions. And what I love the most, which is like submission. Like submission is the protagonist of the event.
Yeah. First of all, the submission is the protagonist is now one of my favorite quotes in history when it comes to the Eddie Bravo Invitational. That's perfect. And I wanted to ask,
that's what I believe, that's the aim. It feels like that's the aim of it right now. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, sorry that I interrupt you, it depends on the fighters that step into the mat together. You know what I mean?
Right. And so that was my question, which is, have you done a lot of sub-only competitions in the past?
No, I have not. Actually, I don't think I ever have.
Wow. So this will definitely be a new experience for you. So we also took a quick peek at the brackets, and we saw that in the first round you were going to be fighting Richie Martinez.
Correct.
Who's a little bit smaller of a guy, but he's definitely way more experienced in the sub-only world, because he comes from that 10th Planet system, and he comes from all of those sub-only type guys. So what is it that you have to do in order to combat somebody who's got so much extra experience in that regard?
I mean, the thing is – so check it out. When I started training jiu-jitsu, I started training like it was valetudo jiu-jitsu, you know? So I used to get like punched in the face. I developed my guard getting punched in the face.
I wasn't
planning on being an MMA fighter, but that's just what was offered, you know? Sport jiu-jitsu hadn't exploded yet. So I'm talking about maybe early, like 2002, you know, 2002, 2003. Then when I stopped training, I came back in 2006, then I got into sport jiu-jitsu. But the whole essence of my style, let's say, and I don't know if you've ever seen me fight, is like I'm only submission oriented. So, you know, every time I lose a fight is or win is because of that. Like, that's at the core of me. So, like, if Boogie has more experience, he has more experience competing at EBI because I've never been there. But that's just how I've been training my whole life, you know? Like, I don't care for points, man. I'm still, like, I learned the rules for jiu-jitsu, like, when I got my black belt, bro. Like, honestly. Mm-hmm. I know it sounds weird and shit, but the thing is, everything stems from going for the tap.
Yeah.
So,
and I think we need more of that in the jiu-jitsu community. You know, I think it's people who stall out that kind of give that jiu-jitsu is boring, you know, approach that people don't like. Now, my other question for you, Abraham, is the people who have typically won EBI are leg lock freaks. I mean, Richie uh-huh. himself has a lot of wins via heel hook, knee bars. Uh-huh. How is your leg lock defense? How are your leg lock attacks?
Well, I wouldn't call myself a leg lock specialist, but I've only gotten finished like I've only been attacked leg locks, meaning including knee bars.
Yeah, sure, including knee bars.
Okay, so I've only been attacked on my legs effectively like a very like low percentage of the time. I've gotten heel hooked once. I got heel hooked by Joao Assis once. And, but again, I mean, I don't want to like give too much away and this and that, but oh, I do have a really good straight ankle footlock.
Nice.
And I mean, the thing about the leg locks is the higher you go, you know, up the skill level of the people involved, it's not, doesn't happen so easily, I don't think.
You mentioned you're 255 pounds. You know, Boogeyman fights somewhere around 170 most of the time, uh-huh. sometimes even a little bit lighter than that. Do you think that weight will come into play? Because we know you like to work out of your guard.
Yeah.
But is it something you've thought about to use more top game against some of these smaller guys?
Yeah, I love using – I mean, I like using – I like top game and I like playing guard, you know. I like playing guard in the gi because of the grips. But in the Nogi, I have an effective guard too, but the approach changes a little bit because you can, since there are no points, you can drop back and start like looking for leg entanglement. I'm physically the strongest person in the bracket, I would assume.
I think you are now that Dean Lister and Vinny Magalhães have dropped out and Cyborg obviously dropping out. You are probably the strongest.
Yeah, including them. You know, I'm a relatively strong human being, bro. Like, I have, you know, massive legs. I'm 6'4" and I'm like 255, 260 pounds. So I've never lost a match because of physicality, you know? So every time I lose a match is because I've been outclassed in the technical aspect of a fight. But dude, I mean, as far as Boogie is concerned, dude, I'm just stoked because I know the guy is going to go for it. And that's all I can ask for in a match, man. If I could have a wish right now in the rest of my jiu-jitsu life is that all my opponents go for it and then may the best man win. That, to me, that shit would be like, you know, it would make me the happiest, I believe.
Well, and I think you're going to get your wish this Sunday.
Yeah. No. Guaranteed, dude. Like, I talk to Boogie all the time, dude, and he's like, dude, I'm so stoked it's you. Because of that same approach, you know, and it's you can't be afraid to lose, man. If you're afraid to lose, you're already like two steps behind.
That's right. Well, listen, Abraham, we so appreciate you giving us your time today. We are psyched, just as you are, for the EBI 6 tournament this Sunday, April 24th. You will be fighting Richie the Boogeyman Martinez. You have two fans here and us, myself
Thank
and
you.
My co-host Dan. We will be rooting for you to get through the bracket, and we can't wait to see it happen. Thank
Dude,
you so much for coming on.
I'm stoked, man. I'm stoked. And what was the quote again?
Submission is the protagonist.
That's what's up, man. Boss.
This is Daniel Gumby Vreeland here with my co-host Dave Tremonti, and we are here with EBI 6 competitor Amir Alam Amir, I'm just going to jump right into it here. So me and Dave are big jujitsu practitioners, and I love the rubber guard stuff. And sometimes I get some weird looks being about 205 pounds doing the rubber guard stuff. You have got to have had some weird looks being as big as you are and still being able to pull off that rubber guard stuff, no?
Absolutely. My favorite episode in that regard was the time I went to CSW, Josh Brundage and Eric Paulson's gym down at Bulletin, California. And I tell people it's kind of a jockey gym. It's got this real, meathead vibe, nothing but love. To Josh and Eric. That's just the sort of culture down there. And I could tell I was getting looks like I was this fat nerd. Like, who is this kid? And then I immediately started Google plotting everybody I was rolling with. And it was just really nice to see attitude change. And that's one of the things I love about jiu-jitsu is that you can always earn respect. And, you know, prejudice is just a human thing. We all do it. But in jiu-jitsu, you'll earn respect on that.
That's right. Now, what's your background as far as sub-only? Do you have a lot of experience in sub-only style tournaments, or do you more come from the traditional points tournaments?
So I've definitely done more points tournaments, but I've always ignored the points. I've never thought about, oh, I should pass, I should settle in this position, I should hold on. I didn't learn jiu-jitsu that I could, you know, almost pass and then hold on to win by advantage. Every match, every training session, I'm looking to apply my moves and get this position. So, yeah, it's not a new thing. And as far as the sub-only tournaments, I've won the Gracie Nationals a few times. I've done them here and there when they pop up. It's a fairly new phenomenon. I expect to see it happen.
You also have a wrestling background, is that correct?
Yes.
So you have a wrestling background. Now, you know, typically the rubber guard guys are better off their back. How do you balance the idea of whether or not you want to work your top game or work off your back?
So it always just depends on the opponent and what mood I'm in and how good my cardio is. Wrestling is exhausting.
Yeah.
So even coming from wrestling first, it's still much more exhausting than playing guard or playing top game. So if I didn't get good enough training camp for a particular tournament, I'll probably avoid wrestling.
Yeah,
as much as possible.
And your first opponent is a hell of a wrestler in his own regards, Rustam Chiziev. Does that come into play too, whether or not the guy you're fighting has a load of wrestling background?
I'm not too worried about it. He does have beautiful wrestling, but I've seen him taken down before by non-wrestlers. I actually saw Luke Ruckholt taken down way back in 2010 once. And I also have a size advantage over Rustam, so we'll just see how it goes on the night, how I feel, what game plan I feel like in play.
No, of course, traditionally the winners of EBI have been nothing short of leg lock freaks. The field is littered with guys who like to attack the legs. What is your, preference when it comes to leg locks? Do you feel comfortable defending them, obviously, but how about attacking them? What's your take on if you do get deep into the tournament, if you were to encounter someone who's going to attack the legs?
So I love leg locks personally. I like all submissions. I think basically everything should be legal, sort of, I don't know, eye gouging and fighting. And leg locks are a beautiful part of the game that have been avoided by traditional jiu-jitsu for way too long. I've been working on them quite a bit now over the last 4 or 5 years. I've been working with Josh Barnett in Wilmington for a while on those. And the place I've been training here where I live now in Salt Lake City, Salt Lake Grappling Club, very heavy leg lock emphasis. So I feel really comfortable. I've been watching a lot of Eddie Cummings and Gary Tonin tape. I like my box. I'll attack them, and I feel great defending them.
So obviously you mentioned Gary Tonin in there, which is interesting because he is on the other side of the brackets for you. Is he like the type of guy that you are very interested in fighting? Like, is your goal here to get a fight with somebody who is a leg lock freak like that, or is the big name in grappling right now?
First of all, I'm a huge Tonin fan. I first really heard of him at the 2013 ABCC and I saw his match. I was there live, and I saw his match against Chrome Gracie.
Yeah, awesome match.
Best jiu-jitsu match. Oh, man, incredible. Best jiu-jitsu match I've ever seen. And so since then, I've been following Tonin. And he really has the same mentality I do, just go for the kill. Just utter dominance and creativity. And I love it. So I'd be hugely honored to face someone like Tonin. Rustam is also a brilliant, brilliant wrestler. It's just an honor, really, to be on this field. It's such an incredible tournament. And I'm happy to face anyone. If I get past Rustam, there's DJ Jackson and Bruno Bastos just next to me in the bracket. Both of those guys are fabulous big man grapplers. So, whoever I get to face, it's just going to be a big honor and a joy.
Absolutely. And, you mentioned ADCC. We did want to ask you about that. What did competing in ADCC mean for you, especially being from Abu Dhabi yourself?
Yeah, so it was really bittersweet. I changed my whole life training for that tournament. So anyone who knows me knows that I really love beer. Beer is like my favorite.
What's your favorite kind of beer?
I like dark beer. Especially Belgian beers.
Okay, cool.
My very favorite beer, I'd say, is the Petrus Double Brewing.
I never had that.
You got to be careful with those Belgian beers, too. One or two. Little bit will do you.
This is one of the many, many benefits of being a heavyweight. Try all sorts of things. But, I've never met a beer I don't like. Bud Light is also delicious. So anyone who knows me knows that I'm an absolute beer fanatic, and I quit drinking for 5 months before ADCC. I've trained ridiculously. I've never trained so hard in my life. I was in perfect shape, and I ended up tripping up in the first round. I lost to Jared Dopp, and it was really heartbreaking. I had no excuses to fall back on. Often we, as competitors, leave ourselves excuses. I mean, it's kind of a cowardly thing, but you lose to a guy and you say, well, I didn't train as hard as I could have, or, oh, I was injured, so that's why I lost. And I had absolutely no excuse for losing at the ADCC, so it was really heartbreaking.
Yeah. Yeah.
But at the same time, it was glorious just to be here.
Well, Amir, we are actually running out of time. We can't thank you enough for coming on the show. I'm about as unprofessional as they come, so anyone who comes on our show, I just become an instant fan of. I'm not an unbiased reporter here. So I will be rooting for you this Sunday at EBI6, April 24th. You can get it on pay-per-view. It's streaming on Fight Pass. And Amir, we thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and everyone who's listening, please tune in. It's going to be a hell of an event.
All right, Gumby, there you had it. Two of the EBI competitors for this coming Sunday, and we got to talk to them.
I love how enthusiastic they are about it, too, and both of them mentioned that their mentality has always been sub-first, even when they're in points tournaments. So it's good to see, some of the bigger guys get a shot in one of these tournaments. And it'll be interesting to see how somebody like Gary Tonin at, 170 pounds or so, how he does against somebody who's 260.
It is pretty interesting. I'm so glad they made this an absolute. So, again, that's EBI 6. If you have Fight Pass, it'll be streaming live there. You could get it on pay-per-view, I believe you can order it online. But just, it's 2015, 2016, whatever year it is. Why don't you just go ahead and Google EBI 6. Figure it out for yourself, but get on it because it's going to be awesome. Okay, with that out of the way, Gumby, we will now turn our attention to this Saturday night, April 23rd, UFC 197, supposed to be Jones versus Cormier. Of course, Cormier out with an injury, their title fight delayed. Ovince St. Preux steps up on short notice, about 3 weeks or so, and takes on John Bones Jones, ever heard of him, in an interim title fight. Jones, of course, we have not seen in about 14 months here. He last defeated Daniel Cormier in January of 2015, a 5-round unanimous decision win. St. Preux coming off a win over Feijão, but a loss before that to Glover Teixeira. He's 2-1 in his last three, also has a win over Patrick Cummins last year. Your thoughts?
So first of all, I feel like everything you said about the show this past weekend, UFC on Fox with the injury replacements, is so pertinent to this 197 card too, because even though we lose the main event here with you know, Cormier stepping out and OSP stepping in. There are so many fun fighters on this card, and we're going to get a chance to go through them. And I told Dave before we went on air that there are legitimately like three or four guys that I really love on this card that maybe you haven't heard of, maybe you have, but they're going to be populating the lower fights, and they're so fun to watch.
And I got to say on that same point, Gumby, I'm not opposed to John Jones after a 14-month layoff plus some prison time and just a crazy time in his life not getting thrown right back into a raging inferno of a Daniel Cormier rematch. I believe Jones would win that, don't get me wrong. But I'm not opposed when a Khabib comes back off of 2 years injury, you give him a tune-up fight. And if you want to call this a tune-up fight for John Jones, and hey, I don't know, maybe Ovince St. Preux will shock the world and knock him out or something, but I just feel like when you haven't seen a guy like a John Jones, like a Khabib, I'm not even that huge on GSP coming back if they do give him Robbie Lawler, if some rumors prove true. I almost rather see him fight like a 5-10 fighter, not the tops in the world, off a 2-year layoff.
Yeah, I would kind of agree with that. I mean, I think there are special cases in this. You know, Khabib has got to win over the champ, I agree, but you know, he never had a title fight in his life. So throwing him right into a title fighter, a big name fight right when he comes back seems silly. Whereas John Jones is in my opinion, is the greatest fighter who ever lived. I mean, he hasn't lost. He has lost by DQ once, but he hasn't lost.
But it wasn't a real loss. Yeah, he got Steve Mazzagatti'd.
Nobody ever touched him. You know what I mean? Like, apart from Gustafson getting in a couple of shots and making me question the decision, he's never been touched. You know, like, this is a guy who is as good as it comes. So, I mean, I didn't need to see him in the tune-up fight, but I think he's going to absolutely demolish OSP in a way that makes us be like, damn, we forgot how good he was.
Right. So, in Vegas, you have John Jones, the heavy favorite, -550. Ovince St. Preux hovering around a +400 dog. Obviously, you said yourself right there, you pick Jones via demolition.
I can't believe the odds are as close as he's only getting +400. I wouldn't bet on him until it got close to +800.
Okay, but this was my question to you. Paint me the path. If Ovince St. Preux were to shock the world, how would that path to victory go down?
So Ovince St. Preux has got some excellent, excellent ground and pound. Okay, I watched him in Boston one time knock out a guy from guard. Okay, he's got the kind of power where if he postures up just about anywhere, he can knock you out. You know, whether it's side control, in guard, half guard, anything like that. The only thing I could see, John Jones failing on a takedown attempt. You know, he goes for like, you know, some fruity takedown attempt where he, you know, like German suplex style or something like that. And it fails. St. Preux winds up on top and lands a couple of those shots. I don't think St. Preux can take him down. Unless he, like, really shocks him with a takedown. You know, like, Jones is just not expecting it. But my only path to victory for him is a ground-and-pound TKO. And I don't think it's going to happen. I think Jones is going to keep it standing. St. Preux is going to try to use his length, but he's not used to fighting somebody who's longer than he is. And he's about to get a taste of it, I think.
All right, so you have it there, folks. If St. Preux is to shock the world, it will be off a fruity takedown attempt by John Jones and then ground and pound by
Thank
Owen
you for
St.
quoting the fruity part.
I love that. All right, and then the co-main event, I guess you could call it legitimate title shot, no disrespect to the interim tag, but you have Demetrius Johnson defending his flyweight title for the 4,000th time. No one can beat him, but Henry Cejudo is going to put up his best shot, or he'll put forward his best step. I don't know what analogy I'm going for here. Henry Cejudo, the Olympic wrestler, who's kind of the prototypical wrestle boxer. He's 4-0 in the UFC. He's coming off a split decision win over Jussier da Silva. He's beaten Chico Camus, Chris Carriasso, another former title shot contender, and Dustin Kimura. Your boy, Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson, of course, coming off beating John Dodson. How do you see this one playing out?
I mean, like, every single time I see Mighty Mouse fight somebody, I want to pick against him just because I want to believe that there's somebody out there who is going to give him a different look or, you know, mess with him in some sort of way. But he is now officially transcended into, like, Anderson Silva territory for me. Until somebody beats him, I'm not picking against him. I mean, I just truly believe he's made me look bad enough. Just even thinking about laying money on somebody else, you know, he has beaten everybody, and not just beaten everybody, but made a lot of people look stupid. I mean, he knocked out Benavidez. He armbarred Horiguchi. Like, you know, like, he's looked – the armbar Horiguchi or McDonald? Either way, he beat both of them. I mean, he's made people look really, 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 really bad. And, you know, I just think that at this point in time – while Cejudo's wrestling attack is going to give him a different look, I think he can stop it.
Yeah, and he did armbar Horiguchi.
Horiguchi, yeah. McDonald's 135. I don't know why I said that.
But, yeah, and again, you know, and then he had the Kimura win over Chris Carriasso, the list of wins go on and on for Demetrius Johnson, so you're not going to pick against him here.
I don't think he's going to be able to finish Cejudo just because Cejudo's so gritty and has such a good gas tank. But I think he's going to win an easy decision. I think you're going to see Cejudo maybe win a round.
So 4-1.
Yeah, I'd say 49-46. Mark it down.
Mighty Mouse, the -440 favorite. Cejudo about a +320 to as high as 360 dog in most sports books.
At least a little intriguing around 4-1. He, to me, is a little intriguing around 4-1.
We'll move on then. Very exciting fight on the card here. Anthony Pettis fighting Edson Barboza. Anthony Pettis really at like a crossroads of his career here, coming off just getting out grappled, pushed against the fence, and kind of bullied around by Eddie Alvarez, who's now has a title shot, earned a title shot off the win. And then if you go back one loss before that, Pettis lost to he lost his belt. He lost to RDA by a much similar path to victory, where he was kind of out-bullied and out-grappled and pushed against the fence. So two losses in a row here for Anthony Pettis, fighting the striker Edson Barboza. I think the UFC kind of threw Pettis a bone here in a way. I mean, they wanted to see a fun fight themselves, but it's someone they don't think will push Pettis around. I, again, stick by the notion that Pettis could maybe go down to 145. I'd also love to see Pettis one day fight Connor. That being said, Barboza is coming off a loss to Tony Ferguson in a bloody darce choke. Awesome.
So good.
Awesome, awesome fight. Before that, a unanimous decision win over Paul Felder, another great fight, and a unanimous decision loss to Michael Johnson. So he is 1-2 in his last three. This is kind of like the fight for who can get back on track. I will tell you that in Vegas, you have Pettis, the very slight favorite, -170. Edson Barboza, you could get it about a +145, as high as 158 in some sports books. Your thoughts?
I'm going favorite again here just because, you know, I think you're right. They set this fight up because it's time that Pettis could showcase his striking again, get people excited about his striking again while working on his grappling. Don't get me wrong. I know he's probably drilling loads of stand-up with Rufus, getting ready for Barboza, but it gives him more time to work with Ben Askren and the other guys at Rufus Sport who are going to help out his wrestling.
Like CM Punk?
No. Yeah, no. So it gives him time to work with the actual wrestlers in his gym that are going to help him against somebody like, RDA, so that he can pick up those skill sets and not just get thrown into the fire against another guy like that. I mean, they could have thrown him against Khabib, but that would have been a disaster. You know what I mean? Throw him against some guy where he can just strike, he can do what he does best while he works on the holes in his game. And I think he's got a better striking game than Barboza.
Yeah.
It's more diverse. He moves around better. You know, Barboza does a lot of standing in front of you and just jacking up your leg as much as possible. And I think that Pettis is more dynamic than that. And you see him move in and out. His head movement's better. And I think he wins this one by moving more and winning a striking battle.
Agreed all the way around on everything you've said up to this point on the first three fights we've talked about. Moving on, we have Rafael Nadal fighting Robert Whittaker.
Friend of the show, Robert Whittaker.
That's right. Rafael Nadal, actually on a four-fight win streak, kind of snuck up on people.
Super surprising, right?
Beat Chris Camozzi by split decision, beat Tom Watson by unanimous decision, beat Uriah Hall by split decision, and then beat Kevin Casey.
That Uriah Hall fight was absolutely exhausting to watch.
And Robert Whittaker, on the other hand, also comes in with a four-fight win streak. Beat Mike Rhodes, unanimous decision. Beat Clint Hester with a TKO. Beat Brad Tavares with a TKO. And beat Uriah Hall with a unanimous decision win. three-round fight. So, guys, both on four-fight win streaks. Who walks away here with a five-fight win streak, Gumby?
I like Robert Whittaker in this one, and it simply comes down to they have a similar grappling game, right? They both have, you know, top games. Whittaker's a little bit more active off of his top game, but you've also seen knockout power from Whittaker. I mean, those two names that you mentioned that he finished Dylan Andrews and Clint Hester, who, while they're not super household names, they are two phenomenal athletes in that middleweight division. And Hester's actually early on the card. Both of them really tough guys. So being able to finish those guys shows me he has finishing power. And Natal doesn't seem to have as much finishing power. So, I mean, I think that in a game where a lot of their game plans are going to get canceled out because they're a little bit on the similar side, I think you're going to see Whitaker's power be the difference maker.
And in Vegas, you have Whittaker as the +285 favorite, and the -345 favorite, and Rafael Natal the +285 dog.
That's pretty drastic. I would have thought it was closer than that, but that I'm still not interested in Natal money there.
Now, if you're paying for this pay per view this Saturday, UFC 197, the fight that's going to kick off the main card of the pay per view is going to be a barn burner in my estimation. It's not worth the price of admission alone, but it's a great fight to kick off the pay-per-view, and it is uber prospect Yair Pantera Rodriguez from Mexico fighting Andre Touchy Feely, probably my favorite fight nickname in all of the UFC. Yair Rodriguez 3-0 in the UFC, beat our boy Charles Rosa via split decision, fight of the night, beat Leonardo Morales via unanimous decision, beat Dan Hooker via unanimous decision. Now, you might be saying to yourself, three decision wins. If you saw these fights, he has great striking. He's awesome off his back, willing to take a risk. I feel like it's not too long until we see Yair Rodriguez knock out Andre Feely on the other end of things, coming off a knockout win of his own right, beating Gabriel Benitez, but before that losing to Godofredo Pepe via triangle choke and beating Felipe Arantes before that via unanimous decision. So he is 2-1 in his last three. Your thoughts on this fight?
Oof, my thoughts on this fight is if you watch one fight on this night, you watch this one. And I'm going to say something that's going to upset you. I'm going with Andre Feely.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm going with Andre Feely for the reason that I think that Yair Rodriguez has an issue with falling to his back too often.
I agree with that
completely. And allowing his opponent to dictate the action.
And I'm sorry to cut you off. It's something as a viewer, it's very tough for me to say because I enjoy his style right now.
Oh, I immensely enjoy his style.
But for him, it's not the best.
It could be the best when he is fighting certain fighters. The problem with somebody like Andre Feely is Andre Feely is pretty comfortable on top. And I think other than that one slip-up you saw against Godofredo Pepe, he's very comfortable on top. And he doesn't need to take risks if he gets Yair Rodriguez down. So I think because Yair Rodriguez is so willing to go to his back, he's going to find himself on his back and unable to submit Feely, and he's going to lose rounds that way. It could wind up different. I mean, if it winds up standing, I would probably give the edge to Rodriguez, but I don't think he's going to do that. I just have this bad feeling where he's going to fall to his back. He's going to get suffocated by Feely, and Feely's going to ground and pound him.
If you go into Vegas on this fight, actually, you know what? I lost my place. I apologize to our loyal listeners, and I will have to pull it back up on the website. I really apologize for this. I don't know what happened here. I had the window open and then okay, here you go. Andre Feely is the +130 dog to Yair Rodriguez, the -150 favorite. Very close, actually.
Very close, and I think deservedly so, because, you know, like I said, it just comes down to what mindset Yair Rodriguez comes in on, and that'll determine the winner of this one.
And I'm going to disagree with you on this. I'm going to keep going with my boy Yair Rodriguez. I think he is a uber talent, as I mentioned before, and I expect him to walk away with his fourth win in a row here. All right, now we move to the FS1 prelims. What I believe will be main eventing, so to speak, the fight before the pay-per-view actually starts, will be Anthony Pettis' little brother, Sergio Pettis, taking on Chris Caledes. Sergio Pettis, 2-1 in his last three, suffered a TKO loss to Ryan Benoit on the same night that Big Brother Anthony lost his UFC title. Sergio was winning that fight, kind of a heartbreaking loss. So 2-1 in his last three. Chris, the Greek assassin, Caledes, also 2-1 in his last three, a submission loss via Kimura to Ray Borg, one of our favorite fighters.
I love watching Ray Borg.
How do you see this one playing out?
So, you know, I obviously love Caledes because he gave us the time to do the interview with him, too, friend of the show.
I'm unbiased. I'm biased. When it comes to someone who comes on the show, I'm sorry. I'm a fan. I'm not a really good journalist.
I'm a fan, too. But that being said, I mean, I'm high on Sergio Pettis. Every single time I see him fight, I'm more and more impressed. He's just one of those kids who learns a new wrinkle every single time he fights, which always gives me a good feeling about him coming into a fight. You know, like, when I think back to the people who I deem truly great, that's all the common characteristic. Every single time they come out, they have something a little bit different. You know, you talk about GSP coming out against Josh Koscheck and pumping that jab until Koscheck's eye exploded. You know, you talk about somebody like John Jones having a weird new spinning attack every single time he fights or having that weird crouching stance. Sergio Pettis has some of that aspect where he just like has this new piece every single time he comes to a fight. And I think that that makes him a very difficult out for a lot of opponents. And Caledes is great in all kinds of areas of the game. I just don't think he's good enough to handle that diverse attack from Sergio Pettis.
Do you put any stock into the fact that, you know, when Anthony Pettis lost his title that night, he said he was very affected when he saw Sergio lose a few fights before that on the prelims. And I think they said after that they would try to never fight on the same card again. Maybe the UFC just said, fuck off, we tell you when you fight. And here they are fighting on the same card again. If Sergio loses, do you worry about Anthony fighting later in the night?
I don't, because, again, I just think that matchup is so key. You know, you can say whatever you want about why Anthony Pettis lost those fights. Anthony lost those fights because he wasn't able to deal with the grapplers that he was facing. I mean, like, bottom line, he needs to work on his wrestling defense in order to beat grapplers like that. So I think, I mean, even if Sergio somehow lost to Caledes here, I'd still be confident in my pick with Pettis.
All right, moving on, and fair enough. So Gumby, just for the record, gives no sympathy to Sergio losing earlier in the night. He's saying to Anthony, be a professional, go out there, win your fight.
I didn't use those words, you did.
all right, moving on here, we have Dominic Steele versus Danny Hot Chocolate Roberts, one of my other favorite fighter nicknames.
This is such a good fight, too. I mean, and you can tell us what Dominic Steele's coming off of.
Well, Dominic Steele is coming off of a TKO win over Dong Hung Kim.
Not the stun gun, Kim. Right. The maestro Dong Hung Kim. And it's a slam TKO.
And before that, that's right. And before that, a loss to Zach Cummins, beat Chris Merzhwak. Before that, that was in Strikeforce. So Dominic Steele is 1-1 in the UFC, and he will be fighting Danny Hot Chocolate Roberts, who is 1-0 himself. He beat Nathan Coy via triangle choke. Your thoughts?
Hot Chocolate has got some of the best grappling from a young British prospect out there. I know I've talked about a couple of British prospects in the past with Arnold Allen and Tom Breese. But Hot Chocolate has got, like, a really good subgame. I mean, Nathan Coy is an American top team guy with a really good jiu-jitsu background. And Hot Chocolate just took care of him with some pretty nasty triangle chokes. Dominic Steele, I like him. I think he's got a lot of talent. But a lot of – I mean, the win that's really impressive to all of us came off of brute strength and a takedown. I don't think he's going to get that against Hot Chocolate. I think Hot Chocolate's the safer pick here because his all-around grappling game is better.
All right, so you are ordering up a cup of hot chocolate with whipped cream this Saturday for the win.
That's correct.
Moving on into the strawweight division, the very exciting now women's 115-pound strawweight division. Juliana Lima will be fighting the former champion, Carla Esparza. We have not seen Carla Esparza since Joanna Janjacek just put the fucking beatdown on her.
One of the most brutal one-sided title fights I've seen in my life, with the exception of when Jan Jacek beat Penne.
Penne, right. Which was just a bigger, a longer beating, because it lasted into the fourth round.
That's a fair way to put it.
Before that, she beat Rose Namajunas, did Carla Esparza, to win the Ultimate Fighter finale, which was for the belt, so she is 1-1 in the UFC. Juliana Lima, on the other hand, coming off a win over Erica Almeida, beat Nina Ansaroff before that, and of course loss to Joanna Jędrzejczyk before that. So she is 2-1 in the UFC. Your thoughts?
I think, you know, depending on how much the layoffs affected her, I think this is a fight for Esparza to win. Lima's got good grappling here, but Esparza, it's the wrestling difference. I mean, like, she is going to be on top in this fight. I mean, Lima is going to have to try to win it from her back because Esparza is so dominant in her wrestling. One of the reasons I thought Esparza had a chance against Jędrzejczyk was because of the wrestling. She couldn't get inside on her because Jędrzejczyk's footwork is so good, but that's the only way to beat Esparza, is to either submit her off your back or have good enough footwork that she can't get in on you. And I don't think Lima's got either of those things. She's good off her back, but not good enough to submit Esparza.
All right. I agree with you completely there. And notice I've stopped giving you fight odds because as of today of taping, there are no other fight odds outside of the
A little bit slow fights. Getting to them this week.
Correct. Now we will move on. The last fight on the FS1 prelims and probably kicking off the show, I believe, will be Gliaco. Did I say that right? Franca?
I think it's Jaco, but yeah, you could be right.
There you go.
That's a tough one.
Jaco Franca facing one of my favorite fighters right now because he's a former Ultimate Fighter alumni who gets overlooked on a four-fight win streak, James Vick, the Texecutioner. And how perfect a name is the Texecutioner when he has two wins via guillotine choked. Guillotine choked Ramzi Najim, guillotine choked Uber prospect Jake Matthews, and got unanimous decision wins over Nick Hine and Valmir Lazaro. So after coming off the Ultimate Fighter, he is 4-0 in the UFC. When he faces Gliaco Franca, Franco coming in off a rear naked choke win over Fernando Bruno. So it's 4-0 facing 1-0. Your thoughts?
I mean, you said it with Vic. I mean, I think he's overlooked wildly. Another one of those fights I was lucky enough to be in person for was when he choked out Najim. That was a fight everybody had Najim in a squash match. If I'm not mistaken, it was like 49 seconds, right? I mean, do you got the time in front of you?
I do. So with Najim, it happened in 58 seconds.
58 seconds. Man, I was within 9 seconds. Yeah, it was wicked, wicked fast. And he has that ability to like lock up a submission at any point in time. You know, Franca won that his first fight in the UFC with his grappling. It's not in the same level as James Vick. This is a good matchup for James Vick because of how Franco is going to need to win this.
All right, and that does it for the FM1 prelims. We now move to the Fight Pass prelims. And is it not great to be a Fight Pass customer?
I'm going to tell you what. There are two names on this, actually three names. The three winners I have who are going to fight on prelim, or the Fight Pass prelims, are the reason you need this service. And I don't mean to be advertising for them, but there are three names on this one that are absolute must-sees.
So we'll start here, and you can tell us if this is one of your must-sees. Cody East will be making his UFC debut.
That's one of my must-sees right there.
He's coming off the Looking for a Fight show. He is a heavyweight, and he will be fighting Walt Harris. Now, Walt Harris is 0-3 in the UFC. This certainly feels like a fight that's just queued up for Cody East to make a name for himself. Cody East is coming off the head kick KO and 9 wins in a row in LFC, GKO, and KOTC, King of the Cage, Legacy Fighting. Your thoughts?
I mean, I think the least impressive fight that I've seen of Cody East is the fight right before or on Looking for a Fight. I mean, if you know the story of that Looking for a Fight one, I'm pretty sure Dana White asked them to get Cody East on the card. He was their heavyweight champ, and it wasn't for the heavyweight title. They just found any heavyweight who was willing to fight the heavyweight champ on a week and a half's notice because they found out Dana was coming. And he freaking squished the guy, right? He head kicks him. He knocks him cold. But I think all the fights leading up to that show that he has legitimate heavyweight knockout power and he's skilled enough to stay away from other guys' heavyweight, you know, power shots too, because everybody in the heavyweight division's got power shots. Walt Harris is just, you know, I think he's over his head in this one. He's got a good striking game. You know, he's got a decent grappling game, but he really is in a bad place here against somebody with the striking power of Cody East and with the head movement of Cody East.
Cody East all day.
All day. This is one you want to watch because you know it's going to be violent and fast.
Rogério de Lima will fight Marcos. Rogério de Lima will fight Clint Hester at the 205-pound light heavyweight division. Clint Hester coming off two losses in a row to Vitor Miranda and Robert Whittaker.
Those were at 85, too, correct?
That is correct, right. Yep. He's now moving up to 205. And then your boy Marcos Rogério de Lima, of course, coming off a loss to Nikita Krylov, another 205-pound prospect. But before that, had a win over Igor Pokrajac and Richardson Moriah. So he is 2-1 in the UFC. Your thoughts?
I mean, one of the people who I said that I really wanted to see on this card is I want to see what Clint Hester does at 205. This was a guy who was huge at 185 pounds. He's built like a house through his shoulders. With the lack of weight cut, he's going to have much better cardio. He's going to look way sharper at 205. And his boxing history is so good. I mean, he was a former professional boxer. He's been in plenty of boxing matches, and he's going to bring that boxing power here. And when he does, it's really exciting to watch. So he might be on a two-fight losing streak, but you're going to see a different fighter at 205 with Clint Hester. He's damn exciting.
All right.
How about no shout-out for his name, the Head Bussa?
The Head Bussa. I saw that. I was like, yeah, that's something.
Didn't get any love, the Head Bussa.
Nah, not really.
Okay.
All right, so then bringing us home here, you have, I'd call him a veteran at this point. This is his second stint now in the UFC. Efren Escudero will be fighting Kevin Lee. This takes place at 155 pounds. Efren Escudero coming off a loss to Leandro Silva, but before that, Beatriz Dober beat Rodrigo de Lima, so he is 2-1 in his last three fights, is Efren Escudero. Kevin Lee, on the other hand, the Motown phenom, is coming off a loss to Leonardo Santos, but before that, he beat James Montasri and beat Michael Richard Cunha dos Prazeres. He is 2-1 in his last three, and actually, really, he's 4 out of his last 5. Lost to Ally Aquinta, no shame in that.
That's on short notice, too, and he gave him a hell of a fight on short notice.
So he's 4-2 in the UFC with one short notice loss. So your thoughts on Efren Escudero versus Kevin Lee?
So I was going to tell you, this is the third guy I was really excited about, but it's actually not Escudero. I mean, I really like Escudero, but Kevin Lee is a very, very, very young 155er. I believe he's only 22 or 23 years old.
23 years old.
Yep, 23 years old. His grappling game is sharp. He gave Ally Aquinta all he could handle grappling-wise in a very, very, very short-notice fight. And since then, he's proven that he's good enough to be there. And I think that with the fact that, you know, Efren Escudero relies so much on his grappling, he's up against the guy who also relies heavily on his grappling and is probably a lot stronger than him. So I think this is a good fight for Kevin Lee, and this is a big step up for him, too. Even though he lost his last fight, fighting somebody like Efren Escudero that he can put that name on his resume, you know, Ultimate Fighter winner on his resume, this is going to be a big move for him.
And one you're picking him to win.
And I'm going to pick him to win. Yeah, I think his strength in his grappling is going to get him by here.
All right, Gumby. Well, another week in the books. We so appreciate everyone for tuning in. However it is you get us in your ears, tune in, SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes. Go ahead. Give us a rating. Shoot us an email with either love or hate. We accept both. TopTurtleMMA@gmail.com. Give the show a follow if you're one of those people who likes the Twitter, @TopTurtleMMA, and go on over to MMA-Manifesto, check out some of Gumby's writings, follow him on Twitter, @GumbyVreeland. We will be back next week breaking down and reacting to UFC 197, Jones versus St. Preux. Thank you once again for listening. We will choke you later.